Looking to improve your diet in the new year? Try seeing a personal dietitian with Nourish. Nourish has hundreds of dietitians who specialize in a variety of health concerns, including weight loss, gut health, and more. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your personal dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Welcome to another round of the best of SDHAM from the SDH Network. John Nelson here with you. Great to be with you here on the Off the Woodwork section of the podcast here at 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Another very, very busy week when it came to the world of soccer, and we cover it for you every single Monday through Friday, 9.05 a.m. until traditionally 11.05, probably a little later, live on the SDH Network's YouTube channel on X, and on the Soccer Down Here Twitch account as well. We take you through all of our experts, all of our pundits, newsmakers, and we let you know some of the cool stories that come across our desk on a weekly basis. Here's just a quick sample of that for this week. First and foremost, what we like to do when it comes to Atlanta United and their upcoming opponents is get some opposition intel and some information about what's going on. So we decided to ring up the play-by-play voice for FC Dallas on the FC Dallas app, Ryan Figgert, and find out what it's going to be like, at least from the FC Dallas perspective, getting ready for this road trip to Atlanta to take on Atlanta United Saturday night. And we mentioned the hot tag, so it's time to bring in yet another premiere. I don't have trumpets, and I don't have, like, goal horns attached from venues and things like that. Ryan might have to help us out here. First-time visit for the hometown guy for FC Dallas. This is where we get our FCD intel. Ryan, thanks for dropping by. How are you, my friend?
How's it going, man? How's it going? We're going to have to get Who Let the Dogs Out ready for any future FC Dallas appearances, because that's our new goal song this year as a part of a whole new era and a new mentality that Eric Quill's been bringing to the squad. So Who Let the Dogs Out is our new goal song.
Okay.
In place of, you know, you guys got the horns and everything like that, which I love. But you know, that's our new thing. So thanks for having me on the show. Excited.
No worries. Friend of the network, Edwin Pintor in communications. Is he lurking off camera, or is he behind a door that you've gone to go hide?
Yeah, I've locked myself in this closet like office just to keep any Edwin comments from sneaking
Keep
on
the riff raff out from EP.
Exactly.
I see how this works. First and foremost, for those that may not know, you're a hometown guy getting to call for your hometown team. What's that like for you to be a part of things now?
Yeah, it's literally a dream come true. I started broadcasting, 7 years ago now in college. I went down to college at Trinity University, but I'm originally from Dallas, grew up going to games, grew up listening to Mark Falwell, Steve Davis, who's now my partner on the broadcast every week. So, when I started broadcasting, obviously, calling MLS games is a huge goal. And to be able to accomplish that with my hometown team has been a dream come true. And to do shows like this and be part of, the outreach for the club as well and as the voice of the team is amazing. So just really enjoying it so far. It's been a lot of fun kind of being a part of the new energy. I was with the team before in a different capacity, and I still do some social media stuff as well. But, coming in and sort of being the voice of this new era with Eric Quill is a lot of fun.
What's your first FC Dallas memory?
I would say opening day against Philadelphia Union. It was somewhere in the Oscar Pereja era, so 2012 to 2016, somewhere in there. Came to opening day with my family. The team scored and they ran to the corner and celebrated in a rowboat where they all sat one in front of each other, rowing the boat, that's always stuck with me. Growing up, going to games with friends, watching Kenny Cooper, who's now a good friend and a member of the front office as one of our ambassadors, score, rip the shirt off, swing it around, all those things. Those are some of the earliest memories for sure, coming to Toyota Stadium back when it was Pizza Hut Park.
So are you rowing the boat in the booth when Lucho scores? Is that what you're doing now?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to get coordinated goal celebrations in the booth. I know you guys do a great job over at Atlanta United with the booth cam, which I think is something we might implement down the road. And if we do, we got to go viral. We got to bring the attention. So, goal celebrations, coordinated goal celebrations with our four-man booth. We'll get creative with it.
Looking forward to that. Let me ask you, what's it been like to see the first couple of matches under the Eric Quill administration? What kind of energy has he brought in, and how is it different with Quill now?
Yeah, so I think I have a little bit of a unique perspective because I got to travel with the team to Portugal for preseason. And that was the first, they had a week before that, but that was the first real sort of getting into the meat and bones of it with Eric Quill, the tactical ideas, the amount of running and the amount of fitness that they were doing, which was more than I'd ever seen previously with Nico Estevez or Peter Lucien. So the intensity, but also, I think Eric does a really good job of focusing on what's important and not getting distracted by, small things. He knows how to bring the group together. He knows how to inspire the team. He really values hard work from the whole dogs thing that I mentioned when I first came on. He wants the team to be 11 dogs and fight for the badge and fight for the fans. And bringing that mentality has sort of, alongside bringing a whole host of new players, has definitely made for it, and it completely changed FC Dallas team this year. And in the past, when we went on the road, it was like, if we could grab a draw, that'd be great. For the past couple of seasons, last year we had one road win. And this year it's already so different. We have 7 points on the road from 3 games. And now we go into these road games with a real, mentality that we could go and get a win at any point at any venue. And that's what I think makes for an exciting matchup this weekend.
New faces coming in. Obviously we'll talk about Lucho in a sec, but you've got, the integration with folks like Leo Chu and Lucho Costa with Peter Musa. Where is that integration? Where is that coming together and the melding of ideas with the new faces? Where do you think that is right now?
I still think it's early. First of all, we came into things with the idea of playing in a 4-2-3-1, defending in a 4-4-2, and then we signed Lucho Acosta. And, ideally you think he fits right into that number 10 position, but I think we saw in the first couple of weeks that defensively it wasn't working, and they weren't finding Lucho in the spots that we needed to find him. He was having to pop out wide or drop deep to receive the ball. So the last couple of weeks, the team changed to having an extra midfielder in there, sort of a diamond. The team calls it a 4-3-1-2, but basically having a number 6 whose job is just to win the ball back, that's Ramiro. And then having 2 number 8s there to support Lucho has really allowed him to get into more dangerous positions. And, he has been instrumental in this little 2-game win streak here at RSL and then home against Kansas City. And he's popping up in areas where he can actually hurt the opposition you know, combining with Musa really well. I think the Musa-Lucho combination has gone, you know, swimmingly. I think it's gone much quicker than I expected those two players to gel. It's been who's going to be the third guy, kind of the second forward in the formation. That's what we're trying to figure out. Anderson Julio has been amazing since he came over, but he's missed the last 3 weeks. He had to go get his green card. So we actually haven't seen him in this new formation. I expect that he's probably going to be the starter, but we haven't seen that yet. And so that chemistry is going to have to come as well. He'd been playing on the left wing for majority of preseason in the first couple of weeks as well. So I think that's the ideal front three. Leo Chu's got the last two starts. Logan Farrington's an option as well. Pedrinho has a goal on the season. So there's options, but I think it's going to be Julio, and that's going to be, you know, something they're going to have to build as he's back this week. He's back in full training and hopefully involved against Atlanta.
For Lucho so far, 8 shots, 4 on target, and those 4 on target, 3 of them have gone in the back of the net with an XG, if you believe in those kinds of things, at just over 2 at 2.06. So you mentioned that front. All things being equal, in a perfect world for Eric Quill, how do you envision the starting 11 in this matchup coming up against Atlanta United?
Yeah, I think the front three, if Julio is fit and ready to go, I think he'll come in to play alongside Petr Musa in the two-striker formation, and then Lucho behind them. The midfield, I don't expect a ton of change. I think Patrickson, Leggett, as the two number eights, will probably hold their position, and Ramiro's been really solid coming over from Brazil in the offseason as one of 18 new players, I think, in total. Back four, we've had one change recently. Marco Farfán, we had to announce this week he's going to have surgery, so he's been the starting left back. Homegrown Nolan Norris is involved now. He's played, you know, left back for the youth national teams. He's the captain of the U-20s. So this is his first real opportunity at the MLS level to play that position and sort of make it his own over the next, you know, month to 6 weeks. So that'll be one to watch at left back. And obviously you guys have some pretty lethal options in the attack. So he's going to get a tough matchup, whether it's, you know, up against Almiron or Lobjanite, whoever it is on the right for Atlanta. But I think the one player that I want to, you know, sort of spread the gospel about when I go on shows like this is Osazi Origide, our new center back who came over from the French second division. He's just phenomenal. He has all the tools to become a top level center back if he isn't already. In Major League Soccer, he's got the physicality, the recovery speed. He's got line-breaking passing. He's got the smarts to think through the game as well. He's been such a fantastic addition for us. And thinking back to when Dallas played Atlanta in preseason, he was not there yet. And Musa wasn't there. There's some other pieces that weren't there in that game. But particularly when Lotte Loth came off the bench in that game, and I was like, oh, my God, this guy's pace is phenomenal. This is going to be a problem when we see him in just a couple of months. But I think Osaze has that speed as well. I think if we get a foot race between those two, it's going to be Olympic standard. Like, we're going to need to hand out a gold medal between the two of those after the game, because that's the level of athlete that he is. And I know you guys have taken to Lotte Loth very well, and he's taken to the team very well. So I think that's going to be a matchup to watch. Besides that, I think not a ton of changes besides Julio coming into the lineup and Norris continuing sort of deputizing at left back.
How do you think formationally or philosophically Norris will get protected, considering that you're already anticipating him? If he's at left back, you know that down the right hand side it's going to be Brooks, it's going to be Saba, it's going to be switches. How do you anticipate he's going to be protected, or is there a level of confidence there that he can be left on an island for a while and he can navigate things 1v1 okay?
I think he's a very smart player. I think his biggest weakness and the reason that he hasn't got this opportunity yet in the past couple of years is his pace. And so that is a concern up against Atlanta, who is a running team. I think you guys are in the top three in pretty much every running metric and obviously have a ton of pace. So I think the cover is going to have to come from sort of the left number eight, the left center mid, which is Patrickson. He's a young Ecuadorian player who is really good box to box, gets involved defensively as well as going forward. So he's going to have to cover him from whether it's Lennon on the overlap, whoever it is. And then Osaze Origide, who I already mentioned, was excellent in just helping Nolan through that first start against Kansas City and helping put out fires on that side. So I think he has a good support network around him, but there's going to be moments in the game where he's going to have to stand up 1v1 and be counted. And, you know, we have a lot of faith in him, and it's on to him to repay that faith.
Right now, as things stand in the West, 6 matches in, 3 wins to the good, goals allowed dead even at 9-9. So smack dab middle of activity right now. 3 points, obviously, out of first with early returns. How would you grade what you've seen so far from the booth? Six matches in, which is what, 6 over 34? It's a little, maybe 20% or something like that. At the 20% mark, where would you see? How would you grade FC Dallas so far with all of these new faces and a new head coach? How would you grade what you've seen?
Yeah, I think other teams around the league that have had this, you know, this amount of change are struggling. And I think it's understandable to struggle with that amount of change. But we brought in a ton of quality. Lucho Acosta, obviously paramount in that discussion. So I think I would give it, you know, a high B, because I think the results have been really solid, and particularly the road results. Those home, the first two home games were disappointing, but I think the performances and the tactical ideas and the game model have a ton of room to grow. And that is what excites me, because in the past, when Dallas wasn't up for a game, they just weren't going to get a result. And this version of FC Dallas under Eric Quill, with almost an entirely new lineup, is going to fight for a result, even when they're not at their best. And even when the tactical matchup feels like it's going against them, they've been able to claw back from behind. They've won the most points from losing positions of anyone in Major League Soccer in the opening 6 weeks, which I think is a testament to the mentality. And now if we can see the growth on the tactical side, then that's just going to bring the quality to the forefront.
What was the level of expectation for the supporters coming into this year, knowing that there was a coaching change, knowing the frustrations from last year? What was the, I guess, the level of expectation and the level of patience from the fans coming into 2025?
It's such a hard one, right? Because of just the sheer amount of change. And, you know, the stadium looks different this year. We're going through renovation, so there's a little bit of a weird cloud over things in that way. But I think, to his credit, from day one, Eric Quill came in and said, we want to be fighting at the top of the table. We want to be fighting for championships. And he wasn't afraid to put his name alongside those statements. And that's for a club that's never won MLS Cup. And that's his paramount goal, is to bring the first MLS Cup to Dallas. And not to say that the fan expectation immediately rose to that level, but I think they sort of stood up and said, okay, now let's see it. And then the first couple of home games, it was disappointing, but now against Kansas City, you get the home form right, and you've shown that you can win on the road. So I think expectations are steadily climbing. And obviously, when you bring in a Lucho Acosta, you're expected to fight in the playoff positions at the bare minimum, and he's going to help you get there. And he already has. I think he's won 6-7 points all on his own with his goals so far this season. So I think that'll continue over the course of the year.
How would you break down how Eric is stylistically and philosophically as a coach? For someone who hasn't seen him on the touchline, for someone who hasn't seen him at practice, how would you break down the kind of coach that Eric is, both emotionally and tactically, when it comes to how he wants to have things out there on the pitch?
Well, first and foremost, you're going to notice the bright red hat that he rocks on the touchline. That's you know, that's become his trademark. He tried the white hat against Vancouver and we lost, and I don't think we're going to see the white hat again. So the red hat has been a trademark of his reign so far. But no, I think on a more serious note, he's a player. He's a player's coach, but he's also a really strong motivator, in that he knows how to get the best out of guys. He really values work on the training ground. He's going to give opportunities to people who train well, and he's going to take opportunities away from people who, you know, don't put in 100% on the training ground. So I think he really values hard work. And that's what we've seen, you know, so far through the opening 6 weeks, is anytime that someone's done well in training, they're going to get that opportunity, whether it's from the start or off the bench. And I think it's become even more of a meritocracy, where players they can't feel comfortable. You know, they don't feel like their name is written in pen, unless you're maybe Musa or Lucho Acosta, but those guys are top professionals, and they train well every day. And that's, you know, Eric Quill has told us that. He's fiery on the touchline. He's going to let the other coach have it, even more so than the referee, which I think, you know, is more common. With last game, he's up against one of his good friends in Peter Vermees, somebody who he's played with in his playing career, going back with the Kansas City Wizards, and they're getting into it on the sideline. He got into it on the sideline with Jesper Sorensen for Vancouver as well. So, and he's a fiery character, and I think that's what this team needed, was somebody who's going to lead the team emotionally with energy, and sort of get them going from the sideline. And that's been fun to see.
So for someone who is going to be looking at FC Dallas for the first time this year at Mercedes-Benz, whether it's listening to you on the call, listening or watching on Apple, or in person at Mercedes-Benz, you're drawn to the big names. You're drawn to the Peter Musas. You're drawn to the Lucho Acostas. For things to go well for FC Dallas, give me one of those second-level guys. Give me a foot soldier instead of a star at the front. Who in the foot soldiers has to do well? And it might even be somebody that you call in off the bench, you know, late if you need to, that you need to. Who would you gravitate toward that would be those second-level dudes to see the successes for FCD?
Yeah, I think the midfield battle on this one is going to be really interesting because I know, you know, there's been some conversation with Atlanta about the best position for Moranchuk, the best combination in midfield. I think for Dallas, Ramiro, our new number six, Brazilian, very experienced in Brazil's top flight, won Copa Libertadores with Grêmio in the past. He has come into the team and just given us that rock, that anchor at the base of midfield. And when we were playing in sort of a double pivot before, it didn't suit his game as much just because he's not a huge, you know, ground cover. He doesn't have a ton of mobility. But now that we've moved into that single number six, he's done a really good job of shielding the back line over the last two games. And I think something that we're still yet to see from this midfield, this new midfield diamond shape for Dallas, is just consistent ball progression up the field. They've been really good in the moments when they've been able to hit quickly on the counter. They've been really good when they've been able to force turnovers. But when the other team is pressing them, they haven't found the answer so far to playing out. So I think that's going to come down to Ramiro finding the passes, Sebastian Legette in there as well, as alongside Patrickson Delgado in that midfield three. Can they progress the ball up the field when Atlanta's putting them under pressure, and as opposed to just hitting on the counter? Because ultimately that's not going to be sustainable over the course of 90 minutes or over the course of the season to just be up and down the field and then back defending, you know, for a large majority of the game. So can they find some sustained possession, particularly if they get a lead at the Benz this weekend?
All right, what's study hall like for you for the rest of the week getting ready for this one?
Well, I'll be tuned in to your show. I like to listen to some of the Atlanta podcasts as well. Always do some opposition scouting that way just to get a vibe check of
research.
Where the team is at.
I see how this goes.
Exactly. Definitely do some opposition scouting. And just make sure, you know, familiar with the team, be out at training and catch any sort of any developments, any tactical ideas that they're going to try and implement. Talk to Eric Quill on Friday, and then we'll be in the booth at Toyota Stadium calling it. I wish I was there at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. That's a bucket list one to catch for sure at some point. But we'll be in the booth at Toyota Stadium calling it for our fans on the FC Dallas Radio Network.
You see, now you hit the promo for me on the way out the door. See, I didn't have to ask that question. You were looking at my notes. Ryan, as always, you know you can crash. You have the keys to the kingdom now. So if there's anything that you ever want to talk about on a Friday when we're in the hour of chaos at 10 Eastern, and it's like, I got 2 minutes. I want to come in. I want to say my piece. I want to jet. You can. So like I said, it's great to see you. Great to have you added to the stacks here. Say hi to everybody there in the office. And we'll catch up with you soon, my friend. Don't be a stranger. Great to have you on the morning show.
Awesome, John. Thank you so much.
Hey, everyone. Quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know, I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
As always, great to catch up with Ryan. Nothing like having the hometown influence and the hometown play-by-play guy for the hometown team that he has followed for quite some time. Great to have Ryan with us on SDHAM. Second story, north of Texas, still in the Midwest, but one of the big stories that came out of Major League Soccer this week is the parting of the ways between Peter Vermes and Sporting Kansas City. For that, we decided to catch up with Daniel Sperry, who writes for the Kansas City Star about Sporting Kansas City, about Major League Soccer. We brought him on SDHAM to ask him about what the fallout has been. Was it time? And now where Sporting Kansas City goes from here when it comes to the future of their franchise. A seminal moment in the parting of the ways, Peter Vermes and Sporting Kansas City. Here's Daniel Sperry on SDHAM. Daniel Sperry, what up?
How are we doing, man?
You tell me. You're the busy one.
Yeah, I'm the busy one. It's been a crazy week. It's been a crazy week, I tell you that.
How crazy is it?
Yeah, it's one of those, it's kind of funny. I had made some jokes at some point when the things were going bad, like what comes first, our newborn or a sporting win.
Mazel tov.
And the newborn has won. So... That she came early, so that's she kind of cheated a little bit, but yeah, man, it's been a crazy week here in Kansas City. One for me personally, too. She decided to come on the day that Sporting parted ways with their longest tenured manager ever. So it's been, like I said, it's been a wild week here, but yeah, man, things on the soccer side in Kansas City have been interesting to start this year. And I think there was a lot of hope and optimism, especially with some of the new signings at the beginning of the year. But as the results came, as the results didn't come, pressure ramped up, right? And I think the dam finally broke in that regard, because, you know, 23 was mainly saved by a pretty dramatic and unrealistic and unsustainable turnaround that was really fun to watch, but probably wasn't going to happen again. And, you know, that's sandwiched by 22 and 24, which were pretty disappointing. And to start out like this, it's a recipe for what you get.
I know that over the last couple of years, we've been kind of looking at Sporting, and it's like, okay, bad start. They make some summer transfer window, you know, pickups, and then here they come. Here comes Zombie Sporting out of lane 8, and they make it into the playoffs, and they make a run. You know, it's like something happens – and you're behind the eight ball, the proverbial eight ball, and then something happens and you make the race in, and then everything goes crazy. And it just seemed like up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. And what was the patience level of the fans the last couple of years, where you had all of these waves and ebbs and flows. And yes, things would finish, but you'd have to put up with that, the rough start. And then you make that race to get in. What was the vibe from the fans the last couple of years, taking this season apart for a second question, but what was the vibe with all of the ups and downs coming into this year?
Yeah. After 21, I think, they were probably a correct handball decision away from finishing top spot in the West. And maybe not having to play an RSL who knocked them out of the playoffs, wouldn't have been in the playoffs if all that stuff had gone correct. So that was a funky one. And then you have the Alan Pulido injury, and Gadi Kinda is injured, and they think he might be out, you know, for just a little bit, and then it turns out to be the whole season, and they never bring anybody in. 23, they finally get those guys back healthy and things are rolling. But there's that stretch after 22, people kind of understood and excused the injuries, and they were like, it was the feeling of like, I don't think we're ready to move on from Peter yet. But there was still some like, look, if things don't go well, we got to start asking questions, kind of a vibe from, I think, the fan base. And then those first 10 games happened in 2023 where they didn't pick up a win. And there was, three draws over 10 games was all they had accrued. Three draws, three goals through 10 games. And the fans were starting to get restless. I mean, you were hearing, Vermes out chants. People were starting to bring signs and stuff like that. And they made the miraculous recover. It led to probably one of the coolest and most electric moments I felt at Children's Mercy Park. I wasn't here for any of the MLS Cup stuff. But I was here for the Open Cup final in 2017, and that was really cool. But I think that win over St. Louis in the playoffs, especially the home win, the loud noise that came from that goal is it's still goosebumps. It was one of the loudest moments I've heard at that stadium, if not the loudest. And the reaction to that, the goal that kind of opened the dam. So you have this like really high moment here in 2023, and they lose Gadi Kinda going into 2024, and they never replace him. And so there's a lot of injuries. The team's getting a little bit older, and some things just weren't quite clicking at all last year. And they kind of piecemealed it and had a decent summer run through the Open Cup. But once they lost the Open Cup final, they really didn't win another game from there on. And it was very downtrodden. And I think fans really were kind of like, okay, like we understand you're telling us it's a rebuild. They've told them, it's going to take three windows to rebuild this team. Well, that's a really long time in soccer. And so I think my question personally was whether or not they were the result, because to me the result lineup was there for when you dismiss a manager. In a lot of other scenarios and a lot of other places, I think he doesn't even start this year. And so it was one of those like, okay, how long is the leash and what does it, even though they've committed, they've said, we're going to allow Peter to rebuild. We've committed to this. So is six games when they finally cut bait with a project that if the project is how long they say it is, it's kind of in its infancy. And so that was my whole question in this. But I also think there's a point too where if you're the whole job here is to win. Welcome to professional sports. And if you're not getting wins, and the winless run extends so far back into 2024 that it does, then I think that's kind of how we got here.
How bad was it this season with Sporting, with no goals, no wins? How bad did it look?
It at times looked like there was something there, but nothing was like clicking into the final thing. And I think that if you go back and watch the game against Dallas, they didn't look that bad. Really, they didn't. And they weren't creating amazing chances, but they were in and around, they were active, they were doing stuff. They have a couple of defensive frailties that concedes the goals, and they lose over a 2-minute period, loses them the game when they were thoroughly dominant and really kind of heavily attacking in that game. And there were times there too where the first half of that 3-3 draw against Minnesota, I thought they looked dead in the water. I thought they looked dead in the water with their game against LAFC. There were some other games where I thought they were kind of in it, but I didn't ever really think they were doing enough that was going to win them a game. And so it was kind of this like patience point of like, okay, we're a month into this season now. You finally have had a few training sessions with your guys. And it doesn't look better. And that's, and I think that that was probably the ticking point for the ownership too, where they started coming around training sessions, you know, over the last couple of weeks to take a look at what's going on and see if that, if a change needed to be made. And ultimately that's the decision they did.
I will admit that we were looking at a match when Sporting Kansas City was down 3-0. We thought they were dead in the water. Then all of a sudden 3 goals in 12 minutes and you're like, whoa, okay. Then there's some, there's something there there, but then you don't continue that kind of momentum.
Yeah, that, and that that loss to LAFC, I think, was the one that for me, like, you have that game against Minnesota and you're like, okay, cool, like there's some sign of life, and they followed it up with a big dud against a team in LAFC that at the time looked vulnerable. They looked gettable with the way things had gone for their season, and so you know, they never really threatened them at all. On the attack, they were probably lucky to not concede more. They were getting run through the middle of the field, and you know, that's been an area that Sporting's had a lot of issues. And I feel like, you know, you and I both know the sport well. If you're getting run over in the middle of the field, you're not going to win a lot of games. If your spine is the problem, you're not going to win a lot of games, and that's just kind of how it was. And you really thought, you know, the player, I'll say this, the player vibe has never been bad per se. Yeah. But it's just one of those of like, you can see the frustration, you can see confidence at times waning or, you know, coming back, and it was one of those situations that like you really needed them if you were going to feel confident about where they're going after that to get some sort of result or look a lot better against LAFC. But to follow up that 3-3 draw with a dud like that was just kind of one of those big signs, I think.
Kerry Zavagnin's now the interim, and he's going to be the man on the touchline for the foreseeable future. Your vibe on, are they going to be looking for someone here in this year? Are they going to sit there and wait and see who's available? I can't believe I'm saying this after 6 matches and a 34 match schedule. Are they going to wait until, you know, November and see who's available, or is it going to be a big gun? Is it going to be a young guy who's going to sit there and come in and go, I see pieces here, I can work with this? Do you have any idea as to what the next step can be?
Yeah, I don't know. And I think the other thing here is like that Peter technically held the chief soccer officer role too.
Yeah.
I think you get that guy in place before you get a manager. Because if you have someone up top now that's going to be vision casting for that in that role in that organization, you got to have someone, like, they've got to be in line with the manager. And so what happens too, like, you bring in a manager and then you bring in a CSO, and then that CSO doesn't like how the manager that he didn't pick is doing. So he gets rid of him. I think Kerry's been around the organization so long. I think it's a safe, he is a great interim for the way that it's safe in the fact that there won't be so much volatility while they try and go get a CSO. I don't think he'll be lockstep with the type of soccer necessarily that Vermees played. I don't think I've never felt that Kerry's and even the other coaches on the staff's opinions have been 100% like Peter Vermees. I think they all do a good job of working together and presenting different ideas all the time, but this is going to be Kerry's opportunity to run the ship, and he might do some things different. So I think there might be a few things that do look a little bit different, and he might do a few different things than Vermees did managerially throughout a game as well. But ultimately I think that the most important thing is to get that CSO position filled first before you get a manager. And I would hope personally, I would hope that ownership would think along those lines too. Just because then you, like you just end up with a mess too. If things go south with another manager, then you're changing managers. Now all of a sudden you're starting to do this thing where you're changing managers all the time. And that's not the greatest spot to be in for a club. So it'll be interesting to see what they choose to do. I think knowing them, I think they'll probably look domestic, but I wouldn't be surprised if the CSO that they bring in is someone that, you know, who do they have in their Rolodex in a way that they know they can kind of execute the vision that they're looking to do. So
Daniel Sperry, Kansas City Star, juggling both the new parenthood and putting up with us on the morning show here, talking about everything sporting Kansas City. Could you see a window where the individual that they bring in gets both titles, something Berhalterian, something Bill Parcells-ish, where I want both titles, I want that kind of control? And, you know, Bob Bradley is out there, Gio Savarese is out there. Would you anticipate even them looking at somebody who wants both titles?
I mean, I think they could, but they've just had that for the last, you know, decade plus.
Yeah.
And I think I personally don't know how much that role and doing those two roles like that works as much anymore. And I think we're at a place now where I think, like, you look at most places across the league, especially those at the top of the league, those guys are kind of top down where that whole structure is. So I don't know that they will not do that necessarily. If a guy like Savarese is willing to not have that title, I think Gio would be a very interesting pick. He's a little bit different than Vermees. He's very fiery, but kind of in the same ilk that Vermees was. But kind of sees the game a little different. And so I think there's some interesting, you know, Jim Curtin's a guy out there too, right? Like these are some big names that are actually available now that they could go through and could go after. But, you know, how do they choose the CSO? Do they keep the soccer, you know, ideals and the same structures the same? You know, as Peter was the one who kind of set all that up for the club. And so do they follow the roadmap that he's built, or do they completely, you know, change things up? That'll be the question there. But I would like to see a little bit of ambition in the managerial search. Jim Curtin and Gio Savarese aside.
Yeah.
Some MLS retreads, I think, just kind of don't really give the fan base that idea that you're trying to push the needle. And I think Sporting for so long, and when they were great, were pushing the needle for the league on the stadiums, on the training facility. You know, when they built their training facility here, they were one of the first in the league to have this massive, beautiful, state-of-the-art, you know, dedicated training facility for that team. And, you know, everyone's followed suit after that. Everyone started building these training centers, and, you know, they came online with that, with Children's Mercy Park, and it was kind of a tone setting soccer specific stadium that now you look back and you can see elements of Children's Mercy Park that a bunch of places have borrowed and used. So do they kind of try and push the needle again as a small Midwestern market, or do they try and at least get current? And that'll be the question. I just think that being a little bit more ambitious outside of an MLS retread would be the way for them. Or, you know, some young guy you've never heard about might be great, but also could not go great. This is an organization that I think its fan base is losing patience. And you have the current now in town at a very large level competing for dollars with Sporting and competing for eyeballs. And they are a fun, they are a blast, they win. And it's really cool. Don't get that. Like it's a lot of fun there, and they need to find a way for themselves to get back into that same conversation, of the fun Awesome environment, a great time to be had at the stadium, because ultimately the soccer is what's bringing people in, and the soccer has got to start bringing people in again.
No doubt, especially when you've got a shiny new Riverside Stadium and you're scoring like 98 goals in a season and and you know, putting everything in the back of the net and just being absolutely nuts. Another couple minutes here with Daniel Sperry as he juggles both the morning show and new parenthood here on SDH. You got a lot of player decisions. I've got like three thoughts in my head. I want to try to get as many of them in the next 5 minutes. You got a lot of player decisions here at the end of this particular year. I think we were looking at the numbers, and I think it's like 17 roster decisions possibly. So whomever the individual or individuals are that come in, they really can put their stamp on most of the roster, even though that you've got the base there with the Bishop, Dejan Jovalić, and what you want to try and accomplish with with Sporting. I want to ask this about Peter Vermes. Is Peter Vermes still, would you characterize him as even being underappreciated now, considering the market, considering all of the external factors? Is he underappreciated, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think when he took over in Kansas City, you know, the Wizards were an afterthought, even with how bad the Royals were. I mean, the three professional sports were University of Kansas basketball.
Yeah.
The Royals and the Chiefs, and they were in a city outside of KU. They were in a city of non-winners at the time. And their Open Cup run in 12 started that. The MLS Cup in 13 was, you know, came before the Royals started being good. They were the city's first winner for a very long time. And they got people really excited about soccer to the point where we already had the foundation here, I think, for that soccer fervor that really helped the current when they reestablished themselves, because those FCKC days, I think there was still a lot of people jumping on board with soccer. And I don't know that they were quite ready to jump on board with the NWSL and with women's soccer as they were now. But I mean, Kansas City for a while was a kind of an afterthought within the whole soccer sphere. And they're going to be hosting games in the World Cup. And I think a significant amount of that has to do with Peter Vermes helping not only put the team on the map, but that he brought people into the game and brought people with the success that they had here, introduced people to the game, and soccer in Kansas City became a huge soccer city in part because of that. The stadium, like I said, you know, he was pushing really hard for that stadium, the training facility. For those, if you've ever been out here, I highly encourage you to come out. And if you can get out to the training facility, and like the tour that we went through was guided, and when it opened in 18 was guided by Peter Vermes, and he had every little detail in that building down to a T. And when we're sitting there in its construction phase, it's just a dirt lot and gigantic steel beams as they're just kind of erecting the frame of this building. And he's trying to vision cast, okay, there's three fields here and another field, and there's going to be ways for it all to be integrated in and on video. And that way we can get everything into the room. And he's vision casting everything. And there's just so much going on, and the details of like what happens when you walk in the room with the pool and the hot and the cold pools, and what logo is on what side of the wall. And I think it's really like he was so passionate about making soccer the best it could possibly be, not only in Kansas City, but around the rest of the world. And I think that is what makes him underappreciated, because I don't know, because of the market size, I don't know if people, and he's been here for so long, I don't know if people really got to see and appreciate the true passion, not just for the team, the game, the coaching, but like for soccer period that he had and wanting to push it to be the best. And he was very instrumental in a lot of big things in MLS and pushing the needle and helping rules happen and rule changes and getting all that kind of stuff going with the stadiums and training facilities. So yes, I think very underappreciated. I do think, though, it has been good to see that the reaction, like after the news came out, for those that have been around, was very like, okay, it kind of sucks. Sporting were bad, but we're not going to just keep hounding on Vermees here. Like, this dude absolutely needs to be praised for the legend that he is. And it just, time just ran out.
And that's why we wanted to have you on to discuss Peter Vermees and everything going on in Kansas City. Hit the promo for me so folks can follow you and all the intel and the info that you drop on a daily basis when you're not trying to get in a nap to catch up on your sleep.
Yeah, you can follow me, of course, on X, Twitter, whatever the heck you call it now, at SperryDaniel94. And then you can find me at Daniel Sperry over on Blue Sky as well. Any work on soccer, both NWSL and MLS, done there. So always great to, and at this point you can see quick shots of our newborn and our daughter fawning over her, and it's adorable. So
then that's all that matters. Congratulations on a bunch of different fronts, my friend. Find the value of naps. I'm hoping that you will be allowed to have that value at points. And we'll catch up with you soon, my friend. Thanks for dropping by early in a morning in Kansas City.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on sports networks. Availability varies by zip code and package. New customers. Service renews monthly unless you cancel. Choice package required. Restrictions apply.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, draw deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Once again, great to catch up with those that are in the know in the local markets when it comes to all the big stories in soccer, in Major League Soccer, and around the sport of soccer here nationally and internationally. Great to catch up with Daniel and find out about what's going on with Peter Vermees in Kansas City and the fallout and what Sporting Kansas City plans on doing from here and what they may wait some time for when it comes to finding a new manager, chief soccer officer. All of those questions we brought to the table in the midweek on SDHAM. Soccer Down Here AM, you can find it 9:05 a.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, on the SDH Network's YouTube channel, on X, and on Soccer Down Here's Twitch channel. And you can always listen to the segments and to the audio portions of the program. You can listen to that on your favorite podcatcher. Spreaker is our Head End. That is the number one place to go, but you can find it at Apple Podcasts, where your favorite podcasts are found. You can find the shows themselves in audio form and some of the key segments from the week. And so one of the key segments from the week has to do with if you were in your teens. Question for you. If you had the opportunity to learn abroad, play abroad, would you do it? One youth from the Atlanta area is doing exactly that. We catch up with Shate Jamad and his dad, Kuma, who were living in the areas south of the city of Atlanta, but now are in Saudi Arabia as Shate is playing for Al-Shabaab's U-15s in the Saudi Pro League. Here's our conversation with the two as they were back here on this side of the Atlantic on spring break. First off, guys, I'm glad that we were able to track you down because I know that we're dealing with stuff here in the worldwide sense of things. Where are you right now as we're talking?
Right now we're in Atlanta, Georgia, hometown.
You're back home. That was my biggest question. It's like I didn't know how international a conversation this was, but you're back home.
Just for spring break, we head back to Riyadh in about 3 days.
Wow. Okay. So I'm not going to mess around. I'm not going to waste any more of your time because I want you guys to enjoy your time back here. So I want to ask, Kuma, let me start with you. What attracted you to this idea of having Shate build his game by going to Saudi Arabia? How did this all come about?
So we were actually recruited to go to Saudi Arabia as part of my career, my job. But when we realized that the Saudis take soccer really, really importantly, we started looking for a team for Shate to join, and he did a lot of groundwork, and I'll let him tell that story. But it's a great place for young, talented players to get a foothold into the game.
All right. So since your dad opened that door, Shate, let me ask. They come knocking on the door, or the interest is there from the family about going. What was your initial thought?
My initial thought, sorry, was just soccer because I at the time, all I knew was Ronaldo had just gone there. I didn't know anything about really the academy system, professional system, if they even had like club academies for our age. It was just how am I going to play and how would that work? And I started looking, and online they don't have much information, and it required me to do a lot of asking around with my friends when I actually got there, asking questions, talking to people. And eventually it got me to an academy team, and we played a scrimmage against the actual Al-Shabaab club, and I played well. And I got invited to a tryout.
So how did that go? You're playing the actual Al-Shabaab team. It's like, okay, they're like really tall and really – how was that?
Well, yeah, I think the game we played was U18 or U19, so I was by far the youngest player in the game. I got subbed in at halftime. They weren't huge, but they were definitely stronger and faster than me, so I had to be really smart with my decisions. I had to kind of rely more on my technical aspect of the game and kind of game intelligence to really perform. But yeah, it was fun. It's a good experience.
All right, so Kuma, let me ask you, what's it like to see this happening where you know about the Saudi Premier League, you know about how seriously they want to take things, and they want to have your son and your family be a part of that growth? What's it been like for the family to sit there and say, yeah, man, he's over in Saudi Arabia learning how to play the sport?
It's been super exciting. My wife and I have been on soccer fields all over Georgia since our kids, most of them from about the age of three. So from Peachtree City, Glenlock, and just watching them grow to the point where he's good enough to play at this level kind of makes all those wet, cold, rainy days worth it.
So, what have you let me ask you this, Shate. What have you learned about yourself? Because it's not every day that someone who is a young man gets the opportunity to expand who they are, who they want to be, what they want to pursue as you get older. I'm not going to say grow up, but I'll say grow older. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what have you learned about yourself in this process? Because I would imagine figuring out how to be somewhat independent is part of that.
Well, for physically for my game, I've learned I'm a lot quicker and faster than I think. I always, when I was younger, I was a little small and not the most dominant kid on the field, and it required me to rely a lot on my technical skills. But coming here, I've learned I have more aspects to my game. I'm a little bit faster and quicker and stronger than I thought, and that actually ended up to me changing my position. Now I play striker. Before, I played more of a left wing position, and now because of my strength and size, I'm learning to play striker as well. And then kind of off the field, I'm just learning to be more independent, because a lot of our games, you have to travel, we fly. And obviously my parents aren't there for a lot of them. And yeah, I'm just learning how to be an independent person.
Kuma, how different is he now as a young man, considering everything that you're seeing him learn in an atypical environment? How different a young man is he?
So I always have stories, but I got to tell this one. So the first game, he goes to school, and then he goes to a practice. From that point on, they just get them into one of these big luxury buses, and then they get shuttled to a hotel. And I'm trying to explain it to my wife that the 15-year-old is going to get on this bus with a lot of people who he can't communicate with because he doesn't speak Arabic. And they're going to take him to a hotel, and he's going to spend the night there. We're not going to see him the next day until the game. And she's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's follow the van. So we drive behind the team bus for about an hour 10. We get to the hotel, and she says, go in and check. So I go in, and I'm standing there really weird. I see the team manager, and he's like, he's looking at me weird. He waves, and I wave back. And I come back, and I give the report to my wife. He's okay. And that was the first game. Now he's been to, I'd say, probably 10 cities in Saudi by himself. They fly as a team the night before. And I've just realized he's just becoming more independent. It's forcing him to mature a lot faster, and it's been good in general. That's off the field. On the field, his game has evolved. While he was, I'd say, playing here in Georgia, there weren't that many aspects of the game that he had to work on, because he had gone such great training and a good understanding of the game from his coaches here. But having to interpret everything from hand gestures and and just things getting yelled out has made him a bit more patient, more insightful. So, but yeah, his a lot of maturity in a short time.
Shate, how different is it? I mean, your dad mentions driving an hour and 10 minutes. So that's basically like from Alpharetta to Midtown during rush hour. And so now doing that with the family over in Saudi Arabia, how different is it from a game day perspective, a preparation perspective? How odd a situation is this, at least initially for you, because you were used to things here growing up. Now you're over there. How different is it over there in the Middle East versus here in Georgia?
Yeah, it was really different. I remember growing up, like, before our games, me and my family, we'd always have pizza on Friday night. So we'd do that with my family every night on Fridays before my game. We'd do that. And then I kind of wake up. We'd watch Premier League mornings on the TV, and then kind of just head out to my game an hour, maybe 2 hours before. We'd warm up and we'd start the game. Here, it's huge shock. I mean, I think the night before, maybe 2 or 3 hours after I get out of school, I head to the club. And then we, like you said, we take the team bus to the hotel. And then we have dinner together. We sleep together in the hotel as well. And then we wake up. We do a little bit of team preparation, do a team meeting. Then after that, we head to the field. And then we do our actual warm-up. And then we play the game. And it was just – the first few games, it was rough because I was used to my routine back here. And it took some getting used to. But, yeah, that was really the difference maker.
Catching up with the Gamatis, because one of them is playing over in Saudi Arabia. And we figured we'd grab onto him before he has to go back and actually play with Al-Shabaab's U-15s. Son and father hanging out with us here for an odd man rush on a 2v1 here on the SDH Network. So, Kuma, you mentioned how it is with you and the boss, making sure that everything is okay on a daily basis. How difficult is it for you when you're over there knowing he has a job to do and knowing that he has some learning to do? How difficult is it to be a parent and want to understand that he's safe and that he's okay, but at the same time, lay back a little bit and understand, okay, he has to learn this kind of stuff to grow? How difficult a clutch and a gas situation is that for the family watching him grow?
Yeah, letting go has been pretty difficult for us because we move as a group. All of us, we go to each other's games. Our daughter does horse riding, so we all go and watch that. And just because it's such a professional environment, there is no place to, you know, we don't even watch practices. You don't go to any of the trainings. It's an actual stadium where, you know, you need special permission to enter the training facilities. So it's been difficult, I say, to let go. Because, I mean, I see him as, you know, a young teenager. His mom sees him as still a two-year-old. So at 15, just to, you know, pull back that much and just watch the games, it's both refreshing but still a bit difficult.
So, you know, Shadi, let me ask, when mm-hmm. it comes to where you think your game is, obviously there are stages of growth, stages of development. How different a player are you from when you first went over to now? Where has your game changed? I'm not going to ask about what else you need to work on because, I mean, it's a growth curve and that curve is going to be there for a while. But how different a player and a person are you in just that little time coming over, being somewhat sequestered? You're having to focus on football pretty much every chance you get. How different are you?
It's an excellent question. I've been talking to my dad about this a lot because, like I said before, back here I played left wing and I really, really came to love it. I enjoyed it. And now I'm playing striker and it requires a lot more patience. You know, you get much, much less touches on the ball. And it's difficult for me because I'm not typically a patient person. And my dad's been telling me I need to watch Thierry Henry play. He touched the ball so little, but he was very effective in his job. And yeah, right now I'm just working on that, kind of making the right runs, timing my runs, and just learning how to play like a true proper nine as opposed to left wing, which is what I'm used to.
If my math is right, the next matchup is coming up against Al-Ula, I think.
Yes.
8:45 in the morning on the 9th. So literally it's like a couple of days left and you got to fly over. You got to get ready for the next matchup against Al-Ula in the U-15. It's amazing what Google will do when you're sitting there and you're trying to research in a hurry. It's like, when's his next match? You're trying to figure out what's going on. How often, Kuma, does the family go over as a group? Is it just you and his mom? You know, how much interaction are you allowing yourselves? Is it back and forth? Are you all there with him this entire time? What's the layout?
So to the games, so training, we don't go. For the games, generally, if I'm available, I will go with my wife. There have been a couple games where we've all been, but that's just been one or two games. Generally, it's just me and my wife at the games. Yeah.
So, do you Shate? Do you look up? Do you look for them, or do you just like it's like do you you know you come out of the tunnel? Do you try to find them and then focus and lock back in, or is it kind of a continuous experience where it's like, okay, I'm out. I see them at one time. I know they're there. I'm out. I'm doing my work. I look back. I see that they're there. They've gone to the concession stand and got things that I like that I can't have. I mean, what's it? Are you looking for them? Are you seeing them? And how much of a comfort level is that when you do see them?
Yeah, yeah. My mom and dad can tell you I'm always looking. Even during, I remember one walkout, I saw them come in and I couldn't help waving. I know you're supposed to be serious and professional, but I had to wave. So what happens is when we enter the stadium at first, I check. Then during our warm-up, I'm looking. And then usually right before kickoff happens, they're there. If not, maybe 5-10 minutes into the game, I'm there. And it's honestly just a sense of relief knowing I have people there to support me.
Good deal. So now that they're there, now that you're there to support, and we talked about letting go and learning and all these kinds of things, you mentioned Thierry Henry Kuma about, you know, hey, watch tape of this guy. What's it like to see him be different and now be a striker? And where are you kind of steering his YouTubian habits and video habits to continue to have him grow?
So there's only so much I can do because I was a soccer player too. And I was a striker, but not a very good one. So I let the professionals, he's got amazing coaches. I let them do a lot of the showing. And then I try to, you know, give him a few tips from, you know, the really, really great players and see what he can pick up from there. I gave him the Henri example because when Henri went to Barcelona, he just made so many runs and was just available, whether to drag players away, which took a lot of patience from being the main man in the EPL to kind of playing a support role almost at Barcelona, which was, you know, something I think all young players can learn from.
And at the same time, you also learn that you are supposed to listen to your coaches because Pep Guardiola will be more than happy to bench Thierry Henry if he's not paying attention to the collective when it comes to all of the information. Let me ask you both this, and Chate, I'll start with you.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give someone of your age who might be thinking about doing something in a far-flung land? It's not like going, it's like I'm not, you know, moving over to Oak Mountain in Birmingham to go and be at Oak Mountain High School. But if there were opportunities overseas in other countries, what would you tell folks that are your age, both men and women, boys and girls, about these kinds of opportunities? What would you tell them about either if they're calling, where to go, what to expect? What would you tell folks your age about this kind of experience?
So I'd say first to just embrace it and take it for what it is. Obviously, it's a little nerve-wracking at first, but you have to really see it for what it is. It's an opportunity to learn and grow your game, and I think that's really important for young people to experience. I think also additionally what you have to do is you have to be brave and kind of confident. You have to understand your abilities, and if you don't believe in yourself, nobody else will. And I think that's really important. And that kind of helped me to kind of earn my spot and to be able to perform how I perform right now. And then lastly, I think you should expect, for me personally, the people are very welcoming and kind. And that's something you have to kind of hope for. And I think it also really helped me. The Saudi people were very welcoming and very kind to me on my arrival.
All right. So, Kuma, what about the adults in a conversation like this? What would you tell them, and what advice would you give, or what would you sit there and say, okay, expect A, B, C, D, and E if an opportunity like this, whether it's Saudi Arabia or elsewhere, comes calling?
I'd say take the opportunity, jump all in. You will not regret it. And I'll add a story to it. And can I tell the story? I always have to ask his permission because it involves one of his new friends. Just the impact a move like this has on individuals, the people they meet and the friends. There was a day I was going out with our youngest, and Chate said, can I come to the park with you guys? And I said, sure, come on, come along. And we get there, and he goes, Dad, can I go to Chris's house later? I go, who's Chris? He says, Chris Jr. I said, who's Chris Jr.? He says, Ronaldo's son.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at him, I said, you do not know Ronaldo's son. 5 minutes in, and I'm walking away from him, a young man comes into the park saying, calling, Chate, Chate. And I'm like, okay, you're kidding, right? So I call his mom over. I call his mom on the phone, and I say, do you know anything about this? And she goes, yeah, he talks about him sometimes. Anyways, they play a little game. A crowd starts to build on the outside. And as they're leaving, Chris says, Chate, don't forget about tomorrow. And I go, so it was true. So I call the mom again. And I go, okay, we've got to figure out what's going on here. I ask him, how does he know him? He gives me the regular teenage thing, a one or two word answer. And the reason for the story is, I mean, these are friends that you're going to make and just keep for a lifetime. But what are the chances that Chate, meets Chris Jr. and actually has a friendship with him? I volunteered to take him over the next day so I could see Ronaldo. I will confirm I did not see Ronaldo. I tried a few times, waited outside the house, but it was, I mean, it was, it's just amazing. The relationships, the friendships and the experiences that, they would have just leaving, you know, like in our case, Peachtree City, our little bubble, has just been great for him, soccer wise and just development wise as a young man.
Well, gentlemen, it's great to catch you back here on this side of the Atlantic inside the state of Georgia as you are balancing spring break and playing in the U-15s in the Saudi League up at El Shabaab. It's great to catch up with you both, Kuma and Shate Gamata. Guys, just be safe, have fun, enjoy the experience. Don't be strangers, and knock on our door anytime and let us know what's going on. And I found out how to watch the matches. I don't know if it's a subscription service or not.
No, it's not.
It's free. It's free.
Found out how to watch them. So early in the mornings, going up against the Premier League, there's some stuff going on at 9:45 a.m. You can watch what's going on with Al-Shabaab. Guys, thanks for dropping by for a 2v1, and thanks for the education. Just be safe, have fun. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you, John.
It was a pleasure.
So we will definitely keep up with Shate Jamad and his dad Kuma and all of their adventures. And you can watch the matches involving Al-Shabaab's U-15s for free. You can dial it up on the web. They're out there for you to watch. And so we'll be keeping up with Shate Jamad and how he is adjusting to life in the Saudi Pro League with Al-Shabaab in the U-15s. Once again, John Nelson here with you, SDHAM. This is the best of SDHAM for yet another week, the first weekend of April here in 2025. Reminder, 9:05 Eastern Time, you can catch up with us. You can be a part of our conversation on the Twitch pitch. You can hang out with us on X. You can watch us live on the YouTube channel that we have for the SDH Network and find out about all the latest news, get you up to date with all the news going on in and around Major League Soccer, in and around the Southeast, in and around the United States, this hemisphere, and all the news that's fit to print. We give that to you on SDHAM Monday through Friday, 9:05 a.m. Eastern Time on SDH YouTube and across all of our platforms. You can follow us at on social media, at Soccer Down Here, on the 280-character app. We're on Blue Sky, so go soccerdownhere.bsky.social. And so we're on Blue Sky, we're on Instagram, we're on X, we're on Facebook, we are on Twitch, and we are on YouTube. So you can follow us and find out all the information that you need on a daily basis and on a weekly basis by following us on all of our social media platforms as well. Live programming of well is available for you as well when it comes to SDH. You can follow us on the Mixlr, M-I-X-L-R app, soccerdownhere.mixlr.com if you believe in just dialing us up through browsers, and on Soccer Down Here too sometimes when we have just a lot of events going on simultaneously. We got to dial up the deuce and present all of it to you, whether it's high school, Atlanta United 2, MLS Next Pro, anything that comes across our bow, we can bring it to you on the Mixlr app and at soccerdownhere.mixlr.com. Don't forget also to go to soccerdownhere.net. You can get caught up to date with all the stories that are filed by Madison Cruz, all the pictures from Sophia Cupertino and Jason Longshore and myself and Nick Alifi and Bart Keeler and all the op-ed pieces that are there as well. So soccerdownhere.net. And you can also listen to content that we have going live there. Go to the Listen tab, click on it, and when there is a live event going on our Mixlr channels, it'll direct you to it that way as well. So soccerdownhere.net, click Listen. When there's something live, you'll see it. You can click onto it and listen that way. Go to the Mixlr app. You can download things there as well. Download the Mixlr app, and you can follow along. SoccerDownHere.mixlr.com, SoccerDownHere2.mixlr.com. So once again, thanks to the Jamad family. Thanks to Daniel Sperry. Thanks to Ryan Figgert. Thanks to you for hanging out with us for once again another run when it comes to the best of SDHAM. Mucha Platial, play it safe. Enjoy the matchups this weekend, whomever you follow. And we'll catch up with you again next week.